Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, there's what the president says about immigration, and then there are the facts.
My fellow Americans, tonight I am speaking to you because there is a growing humanitarian and security crisis at our southern border.
That's an excerpt from the president's address to the nation last night, in which he endeavored to persuade Americans that immigration at the southern border has reached national emergency proportions and is a crisis, in his words. Today, as we assess the president's assertions and his language, we're going to talk about the facts, and we're going to knock down a lot of the mythology being promoted by the president and in this political debate. So here's where I hope you'll join in. What are you genuinely uncertain about or curious about when it comes to the political rhetoric of our policies at the border? Are you wondering? Are you uncertain about these claims about terrorists slipping in? Are you curious about assertions that we're witnessing an invasion? Are you confused over what happens when undocumented immigrants actually get into the country? This is a show for your genuine curiosity. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter. At Carrie NPR. Laura Collins is with us. She's Deputy Director of the Economic Growth Program for the Bush Center, and she joins us today from Dallas, Texas. Laura, thanks so much for the time. Good to have you on the show.
Good morning.
Marcela Suazo-Rosco is with us, an immigration expert, a dean at UCLA, and author of Humanitarianism and Mass Migration, and he's with us today from California. Marcela, welcome to you. Thank you very much for the time.
Good morning. Thank you.
I want to talk to you both about what President Trump said about the nature of the records and the characters of the people who are coming in without documentation illegally over the southern border. Here's what the president said about what he sees as the criminal element.
In the last 2 years, ICE officers made 266,000 arrests of aliens with criminal records, including those charged or convicted of 100,000 assaults, 30,000 sex crimes, and 4,000 violent killings. Over the years, thousands of Americans have been brutally killed by those who illegally entered our country, and thousands more lives will be lost if we don't act right now.
Before we get to the perspective on that, how the numbers compare, are his initial insertions about the numbers of crimes generally correct?
Thank you. No, they aren't. This is a speech that was aimed really at the reptilian brain, not at our neocortex, not at the better angels of our nature. It was flawed in terms of facts, in terms of allegories, and in terms of basic logic. Immigrants arriving in our country today, like 150 years ago when the Swedes settled in Minnesota, are not here to commit crimes. The data on this are overwhelming. The study to end all studies by the National Research Council, this is a nonpartisan research arm of the U.S. Congress, concluded recently that overall immigrants are less likely to commit crime, that they're not immigrant counterparts. And this is true both of legal immigrants as well as those immigrants who have no papers. So are there crimes that are committed? Yes. How does that fit in the larger overall picture? The larger overall picture suggests that immigrants are good for the economy, immigrants don't bring disease, and on the contrary, immigrants are healthier than
all
their
right.
non-immigrants counterparts. So a lot of this was to the reptilian brain, not to inform, not to the neocortex.
Laura, in March, President Trump said, every day, sanctuary cities release illegal immigrants, drug dealers, traffickers, gang members back into our communities. They're safe havens for just some terrible people. When I went back to look at some research on this, I was looking at the Marshall Project that reports that crime rates dropped even as immigration was rising in most large metro areas. I would assume there are cities in Texas where we would see this. What should we do with what the president is saying here and what we're seeing statistically with the crime rates?
You know, I think the president's speech should be taken as a political speech, less than a policy speech. We do know, I mean, the numbers are there, that immigrants overall have lower crime rates, and communities where there are large numbers of immigrants happen to be very safe. In terms of sanctuary cities, I think that, you know, each city has to, you know, that's a local control issue, and cities are making these determinations based on their populations. And one of the things we do find is that if you do have a sanctuary policy, there's a community there that's more willing to report the crimes that are happening because they don't have a fear that they are going to be caught up in any sort of law enforcement activity just because they had the bravery to report a criminal that is in their midst. We need to make sure that this is a fact-based conversation. It's very easy for these conversations to slip into fear, and the unknown does tend to scare people, especially if you don't live in a community that is heavily immigrant. If you do live in one of them, you do know the reality that it is very safe and very pleasant and worth having these people contributing.
Call here from Maya in Grand Forks, North Dakota. Hi, Maya. What are you interested in? What are you curious about on this?
Hi. I guess I have trouble when I talk about this with people because I feel like I'm up against a huge narrative that's already embedded in everybody's heads. And I don't feel like people don't even know how many people are coming across the border in terms of, like, hard, cold numbers. It's just this narrative that I don't know how to fight with any sort of, like, human empathy, because it feels like people have lost a lot of that when it comes to this issue.
I think this is a really good observation. It is hard to bring facts into a discussion. And by the way, your facts may not even be persuasive. I mean, that also seems to be the kind of environment we're in with political debate. But Marcelo, I think it would be worthwhile giving Maya some bottom line facts about where we are on the arc of immigration and undocumented immigration. Can we do that?
Yes, sure, of course. Our country may be unique in the world. It's a country where immigration is our history and it's our destiny. Immigrant origin children now are the fastest growing sector of the U.S. child population. This is true in Minnesota. This is true in California. This is true nationwide. So let's lower the heat and let's think through this. 100 years ago, we had a very similar narrative as the one Maya so well articulated. Fear that the Europeans, the Italians, the Irish, were bringing in crime, the Eastern European Jews were bringing in crime, were bringing in anarchism, were bringing in ways of cultural ways that would never melt to our American traditions. And now, looking backwards, we understand how deeply, deeply flawed that narrative was. Here are the numbers. The actual number of unauthorized immigrants in the United States is now at its lowest level in more than a decade. This is independent research. These are folks who work with numbers. They don't work with politics. Overall, if you look at the decade from 2007 to 2017, the unauthorized immigrant population shrunk by 13%. So there is today a net zero, meaning more folks are leaving that are coming into our country.
And Marcella, if I might just, I think it might be important to ask why. The economy in Mexico, I mean, what is drawing more people or preventing more people from making this trip north or going back to their home country?
This is a very, very important issue. While the number of unauthorized immigrants from Mexico continues to decline, and this has to do with internal demographic issues, fertility rates in Mexico are shrinking very rapidly. This has to do with labor opportunities. So the number of immigrants from Mexico continues to decline. The number of unauthorized immigrants today really has a very discreet source, and that is Central America.
Okay.
And this flows from a lot of important things that would be extremely important to address if we are to find a long-term solution to the issue.
Laura, I have a follow-up to that. Is it correct, given what Marcello just said, overall net immigration, we are at net zero, but we do see a spike in the number of people coming from Central America. Is it correct to label the Central Americans who are coming to the border, we heard about the caravan, et cetera, who are coming to the border seeking political asylum, are they undocumented immigrants who are slipping over the southern border into the United States?
No. And the simple reason for that is because they're not trying to evade law enforcement. They are presenting themselves, they're declaring asylum, and they're seeking a legal path in. It's not that it's not a traditional path in the sense that most people who are, you know, seeking to come in or seeking to work or to join a family member. But these people are fleeing what is essentially dysfunctional states. And so they are seeking a legal path rather than just trying to sneak in. The ones who are coming in between ports of entry rather than presenting themselves at a port of entry are doing so because the wait times at the ports of entry are so long and they're getting desperate and they're getting bad information. Once they cross, they present themselves to the first Border Patrol agent that they find and they declare that they're seeking asylum. And that's a legal process that we have had in place for a long time.
And Laura, would a structure, whether it's the president's concrete wall, whether it's higher tech, whether it's steel, do you think that would stop more of the people who are trying to seek political asylum and the others who are trying to come in between legal ports of entry? Would that stop more of the political asylum seekers and the others?
You know, this is a great point because I think that this conversation has been so focused on physical infrastructure between ports of entry to stop people from coming in. And, you know, that's a solution that's not going to address the root causes of why people are coming. What we saw with the family separation policy in 2018, which is very draconian, that didn't stop people from fleeing Central America. Physical barriers aren't going to stop them from trying to come as well. And in terms of, you know, potential bad actors that might be sneaking through ports of entry, talking about drug smugglers, the vast majority of drugs smuggled into this country from Mexico are coming through ports of entry. Customs agents are seizing them. They're not coming between the ports of entry anymore.
We should say why. What? They're coming via shipping? Why are they coming in through legal ports?
Yeah. So the Cato Institute did a really interesting study on this. And what they found was the drug that's most often smuggled between ports of entry is marijuana. What's happened in the last 5 years in the United States with marijuana? A couple of states have legalized it. So there's less incentive to smuggle marijuana. The other drugs, it's easier to smuggle them in shipments, in cargo, to smuggle them through the mail. And so to the extent that those drugs are coming in, harder drugs, heroin, fentanyl, et cetera, they're not coming through on someone's back through the desert. They're trying to sneak them into shipments. And so if you're going to invest in border security that cuts down on drug smuggling. What you really want to do is not invest in a wall. You want to invest in better technology and more customs agents and programs that allow us to inspect shipments south of the border before they even get to the border, and try to make sure that that is an efficient process so we can seize the drugs there.
All right. Here is President Trump from his address to the nation last night, specifically on this topic that we're talking about, drugs coming over the southern border.
Our southern border is a pipeline for vast quantities of illegal drugs, including meth, heroin, cocaine, and fentanyl. Every week, 300 of our citizens are killed by heroin alone, 90% of which floods across from our southern border. More Americans will die from drugs this year than were killed in the entire Vietnam War.
And I hope you just heard Laura say most of the drugs, the illegal drugs that are coming into the United States, are coming through legal ports. They're buried in shipping containers and other ways to get these drugs into the United States. They are not coming along with people who are trying to come into the United States illegally. If you've just gotten in on the conversation, we're taking President Trump's speech last night to the nation, about 9 minutes in all, bit by bit, and putting some facts up against many of the assertions that he made. We're doing that with Marcelo Suez Orozco. He's an immigration expert and a dean at UCLA, and he's the author of the new book, Humanitarianism and Mass Migration. Laura Collins is helping us with this. She's deputy director of the Economic Growth Program for the Bush Center in Dallas, Texas. And I'm asking you for your questions of genuine confusion or curiosity. Are you curious about these assertions that we're witnessing an invasion? What about these claims about terrorists slipping in? We'll talk with our guests about that. Confusion over what happens when undocumented immigrants present themselves to border control at the southern border. What happens next? What do you want to know? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter at CarrieNPR, to Thomas in Long Prairie. Hey, Thomas, thanks so much for waiting. Now, what are you interested in?
Well, recognizing that all asylum seekers really have an empathetic personal story, what percent of those who seek asylum actually are eligible to receive it in the end? How long does that take to get asylum? And then what happens to those who are not eligible for asylum after they've waited?
Good. And Marcelo, I will add this from Twitter. Bob is also asking, can they all settle here? How would we integrate them? So some big questions there, but I really appreciate your attention to it.
Terrific. Thank you so much. That is a terrific question. We just released a major book with Pope Francis's Pontifical Academies, by the way. The data suggests the following. Only 1 in 10 asylum seekers in the world today will make it, as Laura articulated, into a safe country, into a safe point of entry, to articulate a claim. Claims that are protected under treaties, including, of course, the Geneva Conventions, where all human beings have the right to a fair hearing once they arrive at a safe destination. Only 1 in 10 will make it to our border worldwide. And this is true in our country, this is true in Europe, this is true in Australia, this is true in any of a growing list of countries that are now dealing with large numbers of immigrants and asylum seekers. The obligations under the Geneva Conventions are to fair hearing, to establish through process, through methodologies that are internationally recognized, what constitutes a fair claim. Individuals are today caught in a crisis of confinement where the time to process these claims has become obscenely long, and enter a system, a Kafka-like system, where the labyrinths to make their claims are getting more and more difficult. So we need to address that. How do we bring our American values in sync with our legal obligations under the Geneva Conventions and under the nature of our history as a country of immigrants, so that individuals that have fair claims can be processed. The current system is broken. The lines are interminable. We don't have a 21st century system for a 21st century problem. Walls are a medieval answer, and proposing a medieval response to a 21st century problem is simply irrational and dysfunctional. It's not what we need today.
Laura, given what Marcelo just said about, I think he called it a labyrinth of a kind of maze that you have to go through to try to get political asylum, what are people doing in the interim? Are they going to the homes of relatives? Are they living in these detention centers? What happens as you wait?
Well, first of all, because of the vast number of people that have been coming, and also because of the zero tolerance policies, which have forced everyone into detention, we do have a massive backlog of these claims. And we don't have nearly enough immigration judges to process the claims in a timely manner. And there are due process rights that go into this. I think one of the callers had asked what happens if your claim is not approved. If your asylum claim is not approved, we do deport you. That's important to note. So if it's not successful, whether it's because it wasn't valid or because you simply couldn't prove it, you are going to have to go home. And we do enforce that pretty strictly if we can find you. You know, some of these people are in detention awaiting. If you are a family unit or a child, the Flores settlement, something that a court put in place several years ago, says that we cannot detain you for longer than, I think it's 20-ish days. So, okay. You know, those children are released to family members or family friends, anyone that they can find that's somehow has a relationship to the child. But it's not a uniform system. We don't have a lot of consistency. And one of the things that this administration has been really frustrated with is what they call catch and release, which is you come in, you claim asylum, we give you a court date, and we send you on your way. And we hope that you come back to court and process your claim. You know, so that is something that has been used in the past. I know this administration has been trying not to do that, but we have limited detention capacity. So there's only so long and only so many places we can put people. That's why you've seen tent cities where we've been putting children. The good news is that some of them are starting to close down. They found sponsors for the children. In some cases, those children are not going to anyone that they've ever met, but they're going into what's essentially a foster care-like system. It's just not streamlined. It's not efficient. And there are a lot of things that could be done to fix the system, to make it more efficient, simply because we just need to appropriate the funds in the right places.
Marcelo, if there's one thing I want, and I know a lot of these facts come at you, it's a lot of information, we're all trying to develop some expertise here. But if there's one thing I want listeners to really hear about this, it is that many, many of the people who are in the United States without documentation come in through an airport with a visa that they overstay. President never talks about that, but that is true.
Yes, indeed. And we've seen this for some time now, where the majority of the unauthorized population living in our country, immigrant population, is now constituted by visa overstayers. These are folk that arrive at our airports in the Twin Cities, in Chicago, in L.A., and they have their nice suits and their overstay their permits. That now constitutes the largest number of unauthorized immigrants in our country. I want to share some numbers.
Sure.
As Laura said, Laura referred to the issue of the children. For the first time in history, half of all asylum seekers now are minors, or children.
Wow.
Our country today has, we currently have over 14,000 children in government custody. Of these, over 5,000 children are tonight will sleep in shelters, and these shelters are very crowded. There is no real learning, education. This is a fundamental right of all children. I'm a dean of a school of education, and we know that the way a child flourishes is through education. This is the greatest invention the human mind created, education. We're not educating the children. And the average length of stay by children in our shelters now has increased. And this is a fundamental violation of the laws of ethics. This is a fundamental violation of rights, according to international treaties and U.S. Law. The children need education. The children need health. The children need legal protections. And we're not seeing that. We're seeing, as Laura suggested, a broken system, a system that is not up to the realities of the 21st century.
Dr. Magnuson says on Twitter, it is legal and protected under international treaties for people to seek asylum. Again, if you're just getting in on the show, most of the people coming over the southern border are presenting themselves to law enforcement to seek political asylum. She adds, in FY 2016, the most recent year with available data, 20,455 individuals were granted asylum. So today, putting some numbers up against the political rhetoric and the assertions by the president, and asking you this morning for your genuine questions. There's a lot of information coming out about this, and it's really hard to separate the political rhetoric from the truth. We're trying to do that. And I know that's probably provoking some questions and some curiosity. I'm going to go right to the phones. We have a number of people who are waiting, to Dylan in Duluth. Hi, Dylan. I really appreciate you waiting, and thanks for the question. What are you curious about?
Yeah, so I'm curious kind of about the history of the existing border fencing that we've put up, and especially around the history of the kind of current Democratic leadership or past Democratic leadership in supporting that, the policy to build that fencing.
All right, let's do this. Let's hear Senator Chuck Schumer from last night, actually, who gave the response to President Trump's speech. Senator Schumer is addressing what Dylan wants to know, and then we'll hear from our guests on this.
We can reopen the government and continue to work through disagreements over policy. We can secure our border without an ineffective, expensive wall. And we can welcome legal immigrants and refugees without compromising safety and security. The symbol of America should be the Statue of Liberty, not a 30-foot wall.
All right. That's where Senate Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer stands on the wall. Laura, how about the history of the existing border wall and where Democrats have been on that?
Yeah, the wall, the existing border wall or fencing, and there's various types of fencing along the border, was built over many, many years. And a couple of different acts of Congress have put that in place. I know probably the most recent was the 2006 Secure Fence Act. And, you know, this conversation about the wall, I think, is a little bit, it's too focused on whether we should have a wall versus should not have a wall, and if it's moral or not. Fencing works in some places. Walls do work in some places. I think the better question right now is whether a wall would solve the problems we have now. And I don't think it will. I don't think a wall is the policy we need right now. Border security is important, though. And most Democrats will probably admit that to you. In terms of their positioning on physical infrastructure at the border, it has changed. But politicians change their minds and you know, policies change. And the Democratic Party has moved away from physical infrastructure as something that they support. What I think's really, really important to think about with this, though, is that in past immigration compromises, what holds up passage is not border security. It's not a wall. What holds up passage is not amnesty or legalization or whatever you want to call it for the undocumented population. What holds it up is the number of people we allow in every year, what categories of green cards and visas are going to be, how many are temporary, how many are permanent. That's a future flows issue. And that's what always trips up immigration compromises. So I do think that, you know, their position on the wall, while it has changed, is causing a few problems now. I really don't think that the issue is wall versus no wall. I think the issue is this wall going to solve the problems we have? It's my opinion that it does not.
This is a really good point, and I don't want to miss it. When immigration reform proposals have failed in the past, and you're working at the Bush Center, and you know George W. Bush was very committed to trying to find some way around the disagreement on immigration reform, where it was not, how are we going to keep these people out? What's the physical infrastructure on that? What does it look like? It was really, I think I heard you saying, what do we do with the people that are already here? What are legal immigration numbers going to be set at? It was much more nuanced than the kind of debate that we're getting now. Is that fair to say?
I would say that's fair. And we've seen that a couple different times. The 2007 bill failed on a temporary visa that was indefinitely renewable. It didn't fail over the compromise over border security versus what we do with the undocumented. In 2013, the House wanted to take up the Senate bill in pieces instead of a whole, but ultimately it failed because there were arguments over how you determine who comes in and how many people we're going to allow in every year. And we saw this again recently when there was that effort last year at compromise over a legislative solution for the Dreamer population, for the DACA recipients, and the border wall funding. And there was this border security package that was tied to DACA fix. And it didn't fail on that compromise. It failed because something else got thrown into the mix, which was the administration wanted future cuts to legal immigration.
Right,
they wanted
right.
to remove the ability of certain family members to bring in their relatives. And that's where that failed. And you can see in the Senate vote, if you look at the vote for the amendment that got the most votes, even though it failed, was the clean compromise of DACA for border security. The one that got the least votes was the one that had the cuts to legal immigration.
And Marcelo, we can't miss that. While the president is talking about undocumented immigration, he also wants to cut numbers of legal immigration. And there is a much more, I guess, nuanced view from Republicans on that. Yes?
Yes, that's correct. And I think it's important to note that it was actually Republican presidents, the great California former governor, President Ronald Reagan, and George W. Bush, who took the lead in bringing really a kind of a coherence and a kind of a subtlety to the central issues of immigration.
But even President Bush couldn't get it through.
They couldn't get it through. That is correct. What is at stake here is, are we done with the history, mm-hmm. with a fundamental value in our country, that we are a society of consent, not a society of dissent. We are a society where folk come into our country. We come to through a process of aligning our values and our views with the fundamental principles of the Constitution, of the rule of law, and of the idea that our country is a country built by the immigrants that arrived here voluntarily and involuntarily. Remember the millions of slaves that were brought into our country against their wills. But also remember the refugees that came to our country following the great catastrophe that was World War II, where 40 million human beings were forcibly displaced from home. So we have a long history here that we need to be mindful, as your caller suggested. History is very important in thinking about our immigration today and our immigration moving forward. Again, the only sector of our population that is growing, and this is true in Minnesota, this is true in California, this is true nationwide, is the immigrant origin sector, is the children of immigrants. And what message are we sending these children when immigration is now, in a vulgar way, reduced to stereotypes about criminals and rapists and terrorists that are coming to destroy our country? That's not what our history reveals. What our history reveals is human beings coming with a hope for a better tomorrow. A hope, a great Texas politician once said, Barbara Jordan, immigrants remind us of what it is to be an American. It's about work. It's about family. It's about faith. It's not about coming to our to our country for a free ride. Immigrants have very, very significant participation in the labor market. Immigrants are less likely to commit crime. Immigrants are more likely to serve. And we must humanize the discourse.
I think what Gordon has tweeted here is going to resonate with precisely what you've just said, Marcelo. He says, frustrating that assertions are fact-checked, lies are exposed, the truth is out there, but the president of the United States and certain media just repeat the same lies until the truth becomes unbelievable to many. This is our crisis. Facts seem to wither while lies flourish. I wanted to play something that a reporter who spends a lot of time on the border for NPR, John Burnett, said last night in some of the analysis following the president's speech. I think, you know, those of us who are seeking information and nuanced information and facts can turn back to the kind of experts that we have on the show in Laura and Marcelo, and a lot of reporters who are down there looking for facts, talking to people and reporting. So listen to what John said.
You know, I spoke to Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo. This is a city that has one of the largest populations of undocumented immigrants in the entire country. And his quote to me is, there is no wave of crime being committed by undocumented immigrants. And there are four peer-reviewed academic studies that I reported on back in May that illegal immigration does not increase the prevalence of violent crime or drug and alcohol crimes, which doesn't take away from the tragedy of individual crimes committed by undocumented immigrants. But if the implication is that, you know, this is a murderous population that we have to stop, I don't think that the research tells us that.
So seek out the highest quality information in this discussion. To Juan in El Paso, Texas. Hi, Juan. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning, Carrie. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Very important subject. I live in El Paso, and we are sort of the head of the spear here in all of this. And I can tell you that we are the safest or one of the safest large cities in America on the border. We have been we're somewhere between 50 and 100 yards away from Mexico at most times. And this manufactured crisis from the White House is doing a terrible disservice to the country. I happen to work with many people in law enforcement, including Border Patrol and ICE, and I can tell you that you cannot find 10 out of 100 who think a wall is a good idea. I also want to tell you that there is already about 25 miles of 30-foot fencing along this border with Mexico going into New Mexico, which is adjacent to us, and it seems to be working just fine. And most of these people, what they want is technology. Technology is the key. Another thing that the professor elucidated about, which is very important, is that we do not have enough immigrant judges. And you have this vast pool of people who are not being served in the immigration courts. There just aren't enough judges. There aren't enough facilities. Thank goodness they're finally closing down the Tornillo place, which has become a scandal. It was built for 300 people. They had up to 2,500 at one time. The system is indeed broken, but it's been broken by this White House. And I think it's time that we do something about it. I think facts are important, as some of your callers have pointed out and your guests, and they are getting lost in this hue and cry against these immigrants who have helped build this country.
Juan, I appreciate the call, and you've raised actually a question I wanted to take to Laura. Laura, when we've gotten past this most basic kind of ridiculous debate that we're having now, I mean, how much confidence that you have, do you have, that we can turn back to the issues that you and Marcelo have raised and that Juan just brought up again?
Yeah, that's a really hard question. Because I don't know what the long-term damage of a conversation like this is. But yeah. I will say that we do know that the way our political leadership talks about immigrants and immigration generally is it has a profound influence on how the general population views immigrants and immigration generally. And so my hope is that if the next, whoever's next, or even if this administration were to change their tone, that we would be right back to where we are in talking about this in terms of the nuance and in terms of the actual policy of how many people we bring in. I don't know what the long-term effect of the current conversation is going to be, though. But I do think that it's important for your listeners to understand leadership on this doesn't just come from D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Leadership on this comes from your state, your community, even your neighborhood.
Good point.
I think that it's important that we all listen to each other, number one. If you're not listening to someone who's very scared, they're not going to listen to what you have to say either. And make sure you're armed with facts and that you're talking about this responsibly. It's okay to point out that there are some bad actors, because that's a fact. But it's also a fact that the vast majority of undocumented immigrants are not bad actors. They're trying to be productive members of their communities. And so it doesn't have to be all or nothing, completely black and white. There is nuance to this conversation. It's important that those are the things that you emphasize when you're talking to your friends and neighbors.
I really appreciate you saying that, because our commitment this year is to hear from fewer experts in Washington and more fresh thinking, especially policymaking, in the rest of the country, because we've got paralysis in Washington. And you're right. There are a lot of cities and states, Marcelo, like yours in California, that are dealing with this and are trying to bring some fresh thinking to this.
Here we are in the fifth largest economy in the world. This is a state, and now the state of California, that has a long and proud tradition of harvesting the talents of Americans by choice, folk born elsewhere that want to come to our state to build a better society, to build a better future. Immigrants have changed our economy, our society, in ways that are profoundly, demonstrably, empirically, clearly positive for the well-being and health of our nation. Immigrants have contributed to science. Great majority of winners of the Nobel Prize for our country are either the children of immigrants or immigrants themselves. Great breakthroughs in health, in the sciences. The first bypass operation was conducted in the Midwest by an immigrant from Latin America. We know the first computer was developed in our country by an immigrant from Eastern Europe. So the point is that we need to lower the temperature. Our country is a country of immigrants. We've been here. We've done this. We know that immigration, especially in a time of rapid change, brings up anxieties. This is not new. 100 years ago, there were concerns about the new arrivals coming, the Irish, the Italians, the Eastern European Jews coming in. There were concerns over crime, very similar concerns to what we see today. And what the history has shown is that our country is the envy of the world when it comes to integrating new arrivals. The data show that immigrants and their children are learning English today faster than they did in previous waves of immigration. They're connecting with the labor market. They're working. They're contributing. They're paying taxes. And we also see an amazing and uniquely American fact when it comes to immigration. Immigrants over time not only gravitate towards English, they sadly lose their home languages. This is true of all groups. But also they tend to marry outside their own ethnicities. And that's the magic of the American tradition.
Marcelo,
we have a mate.
I thank you very much. I hate to interrupt you. I do want to get one more caller in, and I want to tell you how grateful I am for the time this morning from California. Thank you so much for being part of this discussion.
Thank you, Gary.
And I will grab Jamal in Moorhead here. Hi, Jamal. Thank you for waiting, too. I wanted to make sure we got to your question. What are you curious about?
Good morning. My question was, in light of all of the court rulings, mm-hmm. which has said that Trump's actions on immigration are illegal, how is it legal for the Border Patrol, for ICE, to keep people from entering to claim asylum?
Yeah.
How is this metering system legal?
Laura?
Yeah, I mean, the courts are going to ultimately rule on this. I don't think that it's legal for them to say that you cannot claim asylum. And it's kind of, it's unclear a little bit what is exactly going on. I think that if you're at for the people waiting at land ports of entry, I do think there is a capacity issue. There are only so many people they can process per day. It's not great to have them camping out on bridges and waiting to try to get in. But there is a bit of a capacity issue, and that's one of those places where maybe the funds that are being requested would be better used to try to process those people faster rather than building more physical infrastructure. I do think, though, that ultimately courts are going to rule on whether any of this, any of the policies put in place by this administration on these asylum seekers are consistent with our laws.
One last question for you, and we had a number of people asking this in different ways. Why are we not talking more about investments in the economies and the quality of life in the places from which many, particularly now, these Central American people are coming from? We don't hear a lot of debate about that either, or it gets obscured by this stupid debate we're having about a wall.
Yeah, that's very important. One of the reasons that we've seen a decrease, such a large decrease in the undocumented population, particularly from Mexico, is because of the rise in the Mexican middle class and additional stability there. There's more opportunity and people are leaving the United States and going home. We have dysfunctional societies right now in some Central American countries. It's not that it cannot be fixed, but there is some violence, a lot of lack of economic opportunity. And I think that part of this is that the debate over foreign assistance is really obtuse for a lot of people. They don't really understand it. They don't understand how far our money goes in places like that. They don't understand that it's only 1% of our total budget. So a little extra money here and there for foreign assistance is not going to bust our budget. We still have plenty of money to take care of domestic priorities as well. And we do need to be concerned about the root causes of this crisis. And you either need to be prepared to allow everyone in or be prepared to the trade-off is to put some money in and try to solve the problems back home. And we don't want I want more immigration. I'm very open about that. I think it's an economic good for the country. But I don't want people leaving their home countries because they don't have an opportunity there. If there's stability and opportunity there, we want them to stay there and contribute to their countries.
Laura, this has been super valuable. Please come back. Really great to have you on the show. Thank
you. Anytime. Thank you so much.
Laura Collins is Deputy Director of the Economic Growth Program for the Bush Center with us today from Dallas, Texas. If you got into the middle of the show, I'm just going to recommend you go back, take some time, listen to it on the podcast. We covered a lot of ground. We got some great information from our guests, Laura and Marcelo, and you asked some really good questions. So if you've got a moment, check it out. NPR News with Carrie Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.